the next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
Hi, I'm Tim Robertson. I'm the publisher and owner of MyMac.com, sitting next to Chad Perry.
Hello.
And we have got Guy Searle all the way from Virginia via Skype.
Hey.
And down under.
Yeah. Land down under.
Here I am.
Is Virginia lower than we are?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is it? You darn southerner.
I was going to say, isn't just about every state other than Alaska lower than Michigan?
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. So it's kind of been a strange week for the Mac Web. We're recording this a day early, so it may get even stranger, and we're not going to talk about it on this podcast because we're recording this on Wednesday. Chad and I, sans Guy, are going to the Simpsons world premiere tomorrow, Thursday, here in
Springfield, Michigan.
Yeah. And we got free tickets, obviously, because of the whole video.
And a nice letter from the mayor of Springfield.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
You should scan it and post it.
Nah, that's okay.
Well, it's not that interesting.
I had the local Fox station call me up this morning.
Yeah?
We'd really like to do an interview with you. The city of Springfield told us that you were the one that, you know, did the video and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, when? Well, how's tomorrow morning? Well, I can't do it tomorrow morning. I've got a credit union I'm going to be at tomorrow in Kalamazoo, Michigan to install some computers. And, can you put that off? I said, well, yeah. Can you pay me the $85 an hour that I'm charging them to do that? Oh, no. I said, yeah, I didn't think so.
Yeah.
What time will we be done? Couldn't tell you. It's, you know,
whenever the installation's complete.
When it's done, it's done. Yeah. Well, can you call us as soon as you're done, and we'll meet you wherever you want to do it? I said, absolutely.
Hooters.
And I'm not going to call them. They didn't bother to even promote the video when it was live so we could possibly win.
Didn't even promote the contest promoted by their own studio that owns them. That's the thing that kills me.
Well, they're an affiliate. They don't own them, but nonetheless.
Well, it's like 9/10 of their content comes from there, though.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm not going to bend over backwards to give them another interview. I've done enough interviews for this project way before the video was even started filming.
Yeah.
And I'm just burned out of sitting in front of a camera listening to an insipid little reporter that has absolutely no knowledge of the contest, no knowledge of the video, asking me the same questions over and over and over. It's like, you know, get some originality, and maybe I'd be interested. But otherwise, there's no point.
Well, we are talking about Fox, so originality.
No, let's not go there. Because, quite honestly, the CBS and the NBC people that I've dealt with in the past, who the affiliates, are the same way. They have the same questions. They have the same blank look. They're completely without knowledge on the subject that we're talking about. Chad and I had Alicia Smith from WWMT come here well over a year ago, almost 2 years ago now.
Two years ago.
And they did it's up on the MyMac website still. They did a whole news segment on us that was like, 4 or 5 minutes long? It was huge.
Yeah, which was surprising. Yeah.
And it was a great piece. But quite honestly, when she got here, she didn't know anything about what we did.
Which, you know, was advantageous because at that point, podcasting was so new, no one understood. So she was in a good position to ask us questions because no one was doing it. I think we were, one of the very early adopters, and we'd only been at it 6 months when we had the interview with her. It was like June, wasn't it?
We'd been doing it for
June
like
2005.
6 months.
Yeah, we're grizzled veterans now.
Yeah, well, technically, when you look at the podcast universe, we are here. You know, this is what I was going, even as they would say on Twit, what is the rat hole?
Yeah, further down the rat hole.
So let's go a little farther down that rat hole for the MyMac podcast today. I was thinking in the car, what does podcasting not have that I think would be very popular? And that's a game show. Why isn't there a podcasting game show?
Well, probably just because it's not, you know, not spontaneous. That's not the word I'm looking for.
Interactive.
You can't get the live response.
I don't know.
You listen to like having two chess masters in different countries. You know.
Yes and no.
A game of chess via.
Do you listen to Wait, Don't Tell Me?
No.
You ever listen to that show? It's an NPR show. It's an NPR game show. It's about the news items of the week. It's absolutely a brilliant show.
Yeah.
It's so funny. And they have the host. They have three people rotating, basically, three different, I don't know what you call them, guest stars, panelists. They answer questions throughout the show, and it's all about the week's news, that week's news. Then they have one special guest who comes on and participates on the game show. And then they have callers who call in to be contestants on the show.
Right, and they'll work with one of the panelists to answer the questions. If they get a certain amount, then they win a prize. So.
Right. How interactive is that?
Well, yeah.
Yes, you're listening to it live as it's happening, but that doesn't make it any better because I listen to the podcast version. So I know I'll never be on it. But if it was only a podcast version, whereas you had to email to be on the show, I think it would work just as well.
You would call the people.
Part of what makes that show good is the audience participation.
They laugh.
Yeah. But they also don't laugh. And his responses to that is what makes it good, too.
Yes, but I don't think it's so much the audience as it is.
Right.
You know, I think a podcast would work really well as a game show. I really do. I think it would be funny. If you had the right people doing it.
Right.
I don't think it would be difficult to find sponsors for prizes. Have two contestants a week. For us, obviously, we would probably kind of lean towards technology type of things, right?
Right.
So it could be very in the same vein as a Wait, Don't Tell Me. Call it Wait, Mac. Something like that. I don't know. You don't want to completely rip them off, but you get the idea.
Well, now that you've just told them that you're ripping them off.
so we would have, if we did it on just this show alone, it wouldn't be much different than what we're already doing when we have our contests, right?
Yeah.
That we could open the show and say, you know, these are going to be the questions, these are the right answers. Let people know that's listening beforehand what the answers are going to be, because it's our pre-recorded anyways.
Yeah.
The person that's going to participate doesn't know what the answers are going to be. We haven't called them.
Yeah.
Then we literally call them up on the phone. Hopefully that they're, you know, they're there. They do have to be at a phone at a certain time during every week. And they simply have to answer the questions. And if they win, you know, there's no guarantee. See, right now, if you answer your phone, ding, 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 you win. That's right. Kind of fun, but that's also kind of boring as far as the listeners at home that's downloaded the podcast. Because by the point that when the podcast comes out, they already know that they didn't win. Because they didn't talk to us when we recorded it. They know they didn't win. Yeah. But this way, even if we get a hold of someone on the phone, which isn't usually too difficult, there's no guarantee that that person's going to win. And it's more, I think it's fun for the listening audience who's not necessarily even part of, you know, the contest that week or the game show to listen to see if the person wins. Don't you think? If they had to answer, I don't know, 3 out of 5 trivia questions.
Or just set them against each other, and whoever answers the most questions in the least amount of time.
Yeah, but how would you do that?
Well, as soon as they pick up and you start asking questions, then you start the clock.
And then we have to hang up, call someone else, hang up, and then call the winner back?
Right.
No. I think you got to keep it a little bit simple. It's if you answer 3 out of 5 questions or, you know, 5 out of 10 questions, you win.
You win a prize.
And
what have you got for us today, Johnny?
Yeah. We could have people submit questions. We could have a question that's directly tied to the sponsor. I mean, it's really opened up to almost anything. And it really doesn't have to have anything to do with MyMac.com either. I mean, we could do this on the side. We kind of do another podcast called Dung Bowlers, which we even recorded one, and I just never released it because it sucked. I think this is a good idea. I think people would be interested in this. You could make a name for yourself as a pioneer in this podcasting field by having the first podcast game show. It'd be even better if it was not about technology. That it's just...
Right, but most of the people that are listening to this podcast...
Well, but that's and that would be probably the first people who would be participating in that podcast, simply because they're already listeners here.
Right.
We could actually start it as the My Mac podcast and then roll it out. Is this something either one of you guys would be interested in doing?
Well, I think it needs to be fleshed out a little more, but yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
I think it'd be fun. A podcast.
Well,
game
that's
show.
Where we get most of our thrills from, anyways.
Exactly. Well, I
calling up the winners.
Exactly.
That and interviews. So.
Yeah. And there's a problem with having Guy on Skype on the same show. But here's the thing: when we actually have contestants on, Guy could be someone we bring in at the beginning of the show, and we can discuss what the questions are going to be, and then. We lose Guy, and that's when we bring in the contestants.
Or just have me and three people on with iChat instead.
Or, you know, or something like that. But it's three people asking one guy questions, I think, is a little difficult. I think it would work best if it would be me talking to the contestant, getting him ready, making him laugh, and then Chad's hitting him with the questions. You know, and as the guy is getting ready to answer, or girl, whatever. We think he's going to say the wrong answer. I could be like, are you sure that's what you really want to say? And Chad's like, did I hear the answer? Is that your final? You know, it could be really fun.
True.
It could be a good time.
Yeah.
I think it's something we should explore. I'd love to hear what the audience out there listening has to say about it.
Yep.
You can call us if you want and leave a voicemail.
Our Skype number is 1-801-938-5559.
Or simply send an email to tim@mymac.com. And let us know if you think this is something that would work. Do you have a multi-billion-dollar company that would want to sponsor it?
Maybe put in the email tagline.
We're obviously not getting rich doing this podcast.
No.
Right. not even close.
The flip side of that is I don't think I'd really want to start another podcast that's going to take a lot of time unless there's some kind of revenue coming in. I'm not saying my time is so valuable that I have to be paid for it, but it is time spent away from the family. It's time spent away from anything. I mean, it takes time and effort to put these podcasts together, and it costs me money to host them. And
yep.
It takes time for me to create the RSS feed because I have to do that by hand. Well, I don't have to, but it works better that way.
Yeah.
You know, I have to get it posted. I have to edit these things. I mean, there's a lot of work involved. And I don't think either, in fact, I know for a fact that neither Guy nor Chad's wife wants another 2 hours out of their week spent on yet another podcast without some kind of cash in the equation somewhere. And I think that's fair. So I think this is something that we really need to look at. Maybe get in partnership with other podcasters, or I don't know. It could be almost...
And that's worked out so unlimited. Well in the past.
Well, I've never really tried to work with any other podcasters because I haven't had to be quite honest. And My Mac has always been a very self-contained little universe unto itself. We don't post news. We don't post press releases.
No.
It is what it is.
Yep.
So let's jump into a couple of the MyMac story or the news stories of the week. Probably the one that most people know about is Apple posted their Q3 revenue.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Topped $5.4 billion.
Unbelievable.
That's with a B, folks.
Yep.
That's a ton of money.
A net quarterly profit of $818 million or 92 cents per diluted share.
Now, also in the report is Apple ships 270,000 iPhones. Now, I thought they were over a million at one point. I don't understand.
Now, you know, most of those numbers, you know, I mean, I think I'd heard everything from 150,000 to over a million, but it was never from Apple or AT&T.
Now, the thing was, it says it announced that they shipped or they sold 270,000 iPhones in the first 2 days that the phone was available.
Less than 2 days. It was about 30 hours.
Right, before the Q3 ended, right?
Right.
So that's really not a reflection of true iPod or iPhone sales at this point.
Yep, and they've also said in their quarterly report that they've sold a record number of Macs.
1.764 million?
Yep.
Yep.
Wow. That's a lot of Macs being sold.
More than the same quarter last year.
And who, you know, you hear about these technologists out there who say desktop computing is dead. It's all about the internet. Really?
Mm-hmm.
How are you getting on the internet?
Yep.
Your web TV? I don't think so.
That's right.
Some people are getting on via the iPhone, but let's be honest. You're not going to use the iPhone for serious web browsing.
Mm-mm.
It's not going to happen. So 1.764 million Macs sold.
33% over the last year and is four times the latest published growth estimate for the U.S. market.
Apple is selling four times the percentage of computers that the rest of the computer industry as a whole is doing.
Yeah.
Wow. Talk about an industry leader.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is there any doubt that the Windows PC dynamic is just crumbling? It's just crumbling. As many things as Microsoft does right, I think Vista's been a huge flop.
Well,
have you heard any excitement
gaining,
about...
They're gaining, you know, I mean, it's gaining market share, but mostly
Apple is.
Because, no, I'm talking about Vista. But
well, it's because they're putting them on new computers.
Right.
Nobody's going to the store. I think it's been a huge flop.
Well,
in fact, you know, Vista sales has been so sluggish that XP is kind of a resurgence. Everybody wants XP now. They don't want Vista.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell?
Yeah.
I think it's crazy. I think we're seeing the beginning of the end of that Microsoft dynasty. They're dinosaurs. That company is a dinosaur.
Well, that's not a bad thing. You know,
I'm not happy with Microsoft them myself has, right now.
You know, Microsoft has over 90% of the market. That hasn't been good for anybody.
No. Well, for Microsoft.
Well, yeah, that's it.
And why are you unhappy with Microsoft?
I'm unhappy with Microsoft because I've had to send my Xbox 360 in for a second time now. The three rings of death. My 360 Xbox is dead. I haven't had it in 3 weeks now.
Does that make it a 720 now?
I am wondering.
Well, actually, it's almost, second.
Because you just turned it around twice with it.
Yeah.
So.
Wouldn't that be a 1080 now?
A 1080, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
It's just ridiculous. I'm very, very displeased with Microsoft. Now, it's nice that they gave all Xbox 360 owners...
an extended warranty.
For 3 years for that red ring of death. Well, you know what? How about just a new machine? Give me a new machine at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me I'm going to own this for less than a year and I've already had to be without it for a total of almost 2 months because of the same problem cropping up? It's ridiculous.
Well, has it been the same problem or do they...
Well, who as far as I'm concerned, yeah, because all I see is three rings of death and it doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have this problem with my Wii.
Boy, there's a loaded statement.
Yeah. I've never had this problem with
PS2. Well, it surprises me as much Mountain Dew as you drink.
Yeah. I didn't have this problem with the PS2.
You had to go there, didn't you?
Didn't have the problem with the GameCube. I don't have this problem with the PS3.
Didn't have the problem with the first Xbox.
No. So, did Microsoft rush this Xbox 360 to market?
Your Atari 2600.
Oh. No, are you kidding? That was probably... That's a rock solid machine. The worst video
that's
game.
Solid state components, baby.
You remember the NES? Did you both have an NES?
No, I didn't.
That with the cartridge. And remember, you had to blow into the cartridge.
Oh yeah.
And then put it in, and it would work. I thought that was horrible. That's nothing compared to this Xbox 360. Don't get me wrong. I love the gaming on the 360. I think it's the best of all the consoles right now, and it's the one I play the most.
Well, nice.
When I have it.
Yeah.
When I have it, and I'm not pleased that. You know, they better get their act together. But if this is a sign of things to come from Microsoft, XP sales falling flat, the Mac is picking up steam, Vista is just dead. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants Vista. And if that's not bad enough, our other top story this week...
As if you needed any more proof that things were crumbling.
For Microsoft and the PC dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
John C. Dvorak...
Uh-oh.
...at PC Magazine...
published an article said that titled "Me and My Mac." Ooh.
Yeah, you think I should sue him for that? Well, he put a space between my and Mac.
Oh, that's
true. I'll let it go this time, John.
Even though you've used the name, even though you dodged us twice, you owe us one.
Yeah, even though you've said twice that you'll be on the show and then you just back out of it. You want to explain? Did you read this at all, Guy?
No, I haven't.
All right, well, I'll let Chad kind of give you the gist of the.
Basically, what it's about is Dvorak had to go do some projects for a company, and it was
primarily PodShow.
Was it PodShow?
He's the vice president.
Oh, that's right.
And I know they're big in Macs there.
Yeah, and so primarily they're
Isn't that Adam Curry's group?
Yeah.
Yep. So of course they are primarily a Mac-based office. So they asked him whether he wanted a PC or a Mac, and he said, "I'll take an iMac."
Yeah, it was all Macs anyway, so he thought, what the hell?
And he actually likes it.
He likes it a lot. And his recommendation now for
his
friends. If you read it, his friends and the people who ask him, he basically says, if you want a computer where you don't have to worry about keeping it clean, i.e. you don't have to worry about viruses, you don't have to worry about Trojans, all that crap, just get a Mac.
Yep.
In other words, if you want to use a more elegant machine, and he uses that term, elegant, even though he can't define what makes it more elegant. And I can understand that because it is kind of a undefinable aspect of Macintosh computers that everybody that's listening to this that's a Mac user
understands.
That understands intuitively why it's this way. And not even the mighty John C. Dvorak could put into words what makes the Mac a better platform without falling on the old, well, you don't have to worry about viruses, you don't have to worry about Trojan horses, you don't have to worry about worms, adware, spyware. You don't have to worry about any of that crap with the Macintosh. Seems to like it. And he says he's, but you know, this is the funny thing. He says he's not about to switch his home computing over to Mac. And I'm thinking, why not? You just laid out all these reasons why really the Mac is better for most people. So are you basically saying keep a PC if you like all these hassles? That's kind of what it comes down to.
I think for him, it's keep a PC to keep current with most of his audience.
Probably. But what's going on in the PC that you can't do on a Mac that his audience is curious about?
Oh, you know, there's all that funky hardware that'll come
out. He doesn't talk about and write about that stuff hardly ever. True. Almost all his stuff is speculative.
Yeah.
And he does podcasts a lot and video work.
Guess what works better for that? He hasn't been on Twitter in a while.
He was on this week.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I haven't listened
to him yet. Yeah, it's... Robert Hazelrig sent me a link to this. That's how I found it. And he said, hell has frozen over. And he's absolutely right. John C. Dvorak is saying the Mac is a good computer platform, and it's his choice to recommend to other people. And that's saying something.
Yep.
To us, had Dvorak came on our podcast and made that proclamation, we would have just went, duh. You know, we know that, John. Where the hell have you been the last 25 years?
He was a Mac user.
Because it's always been this way. And as a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say it's less a better platform now than it was 10 years ago. The Mac was clearly such a better machine 10 years ago than they are over a PC today. I'd say the Mac is probably, you know, it's still an order of magnitude, but not as great as it was. The PC has caught up to a certain extent.
Well, now, are you talking about hardware or software?
Both. Both. Well, the hardware is basically the same nowadays.
So you're saying you preferred OS 7 through 9 over OS X?
No, I'm saying that
OS 7 through 9 over Windows 95.
Of whatever the comparable Windows machines were at that time, the Mac was so much farther ahead. It wasn't until Vista/XP that Windows machines kind of caught up as far as some of the functionality, some of the ease of use, but it's still not even close. It's not. It really isn't.
Well,
especially if you've used each system extensively over a long period of time, the differences really shine through.
I use a Windows PC for, you know, freaking 8 hours a day at work, but my problem with it is that it's so locked down that I couldn't explore any of its advanced features
that
I wanted to.
Right. That's understandable, too, being the job that you have. Those who do have an opportunity to completely use a PC free of any restrictions, and the same thing with the Mac, there's no choice. In fact, tomorrow I told you that I'm going to this credit union to. It's a Macintosh that I'm hooking up there.
Right.
Is it just?
And it's computer? For. What's that?
Just one computer.
I think I'm not sure yet, but I know for a fact that it's going to be one, maybe more. I don't know. However, the person that's getting this computer is the person who helped me with the Simpsons movie, Cindy Goodison.
Oh.
And she's a designer. And she's, for the last month or so, been designing on the PC. And it's driving her out of her gourd. She's like, it's so limited.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. She's fighting with the computer to get it to do basic things to get her work done. Whereas with a Mac, she says, and she's not some Mac evangelist or anything like that.
Right.
She goes, you know, I can't wait to get my Mac in here so I can actually start getting some actual work done. And that's a powerful statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of the switchers, and there's a lot of them that listen to this program, a lot of the ex-window users that switched over to the Macs in the last couple of years completely understand that sentiment. I do. I understand mm-hmm. it real well, even though I've been using the Macs for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
and I started off quite some time ago with the Mac, and I certainly had a choice at that time. You know,
why did you choose Mac?
I think the very first GUI that I ever saw was my brother-in-law had a Lisa back in 83, 84. And I was just completely blown away. You know, I mean, I had played some with the Apple IIs that were around at the time, and where I worked, we had, it was, I think it was some kind of DOS-based machine. And to just be able to go up and double-click on something and have it work, have it actually do something without me having to type in some esoteric command, just blew me right away.
Yeah, it's amazing at the time. It was almost like magic.
Yeah, exactly.
The first time you saw an actual GUI, not just a cheap windowing program on a PC, but an actual GUI.
And I'm talking about the Lisa operating system.
I remember, probably 87, 88, somewhere around there. I was working for an auto parts company. And when I first started there, to look up any parts, you'd open up these catalogs. And they had these catalogs in this huge rack that stood on the counter between you and the customer.
Yeah.
And you knew somebody was a good partsman when someone came in and started explaining what they needed, and they knew exactly which catalog to go to and exactly where on the page and inside the catalog. And you could just drill down so fast in those catalogs because you got good at them.
Right.
But there was hundreds of catalogs there. Some of the catalogs weren't even in the rack. You had to go underneath the counter because it's such an obscure part that your catalog's not up on the rack. And I remember... Yeah. Hold on a minute. I got to pull out this old one down here. And I was very, very good with those. I mean, I was the one that always had to train people how to use them, especially when I became manager of the place. I really had to train them.
Mm-hmm.
But up before... When I was just a part-time kid working there... I was still the guy showing the older guys how to use the catalogs. But I was there when computers rolled in. And it was the same part numbers in the computer that were in the catalogs. But I remember this interface that was basically type 10, and then a little prompt would come up, and you would type in the type of car. And it would sometimes, some of them would give you a drop down, and you just use the arrow keys to drop down. There was no mouse to use, and you navigated that way. And I got really, really good at it. But as fast as I was at that computer, I could still go to the catalog and get it twice as fast. So I ignored the computer for a long time until they took away the catalogs. And I was like, argh! You know, then you had to use.
Yeah.
Oh, I hated that. I remember thinking, this stupid computer. But that's how I thought computers. Where I knew of a Macintosh at the time, but they just didn't seem to have the functionality, I thought, as these computers that I was, which were really just dumb terminals, Sun machines at the time.
Yeah.
But that's what computers were. You type in, and then arrows, and then type, and then arrows. And I could never imagine how you would use something like that in your home, or why anybody would even possibly want something like this in their home. What use would it be?
Yeah.
Zero. Nothing. It's useless. But had I really stopped and started playing with the Apple machines at the time, I probably would have changed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my first experience messing with computers. And they were horrible things. Horrible. Mm-hmm. And now, look how far we've come. It's just amazing to me.
Yep.
To stop and look at the power of these machines that we have at our fingertips.
I like
how
it.
You be- I like it.
I like it.
I like it a lot. So we talked about a potential game show, Dvorak all but switching to the Mac, Apple's record profits,
yep,
and record number of Macs sold. Does it say anything about how many iPods were sold or anything like that?
They kind of just said that sales were relatively flat.
Well, duh. They've had the same product now for what? Almost 2 years?
I'm looking at something here. Apple closed today, like right around 136, 137.
Yeah.
But in after-hours trading, now, we, you know, this is Wednesday night.
Yeah.
After-hours trading on Wednesday, it looks like it's up to almost 150.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
It's up over 12%. So interesting. This the third quarter earnings release has looks like it's really really boosted their stock, at least you know in the after hours market.
Hmm.
See what they do tomorrow.
Some of the things that we didn't talk about in recent history, a new version of FileMaker came out. I'd really like to get my hands on that. I used to be a big FileMaker guy.
I know you were. Yeah.
I don't use it much at all anymore. I just, almost everything I used FileMaker for, there's simple, cheap little programs that I can do the same thing with. About the only thing I still use FileMaker for is for my entire invoicing system for my business. And that's kind of, and I also have a little check program that I created. It's really simple. It's like five mm-hmm. fields. But it just, so when I write a check or something like that, mm-hmm. I enter it in there so I could see exactly who I paid, when I paid it, how much it was, and the date. And I've got a running tally over to the right that adds them all up, which is kind of scary when it gets over $200,000 that you've paid in bills over the last couple of years. You're like, I've had that much money? Holy crap. I should be rich.
Had that much money.
Had. So I'm looking at new houses, as I was telling Chad guy. Looking at two houses right now, and
well, yeah, you sent me a link to the one you were looking at last week.
Yeah, what'd you think? Pretty nice.
Yeah, that was really nice, especially like the yard. I mean, I like a big yard. You guys have been here
almost 5 acres.
Yeah, and
that's more than a yard.
That's real big.
And that's a small village.
But, you know, here in Northern Virginia, we have a big yard. You know, we don't have. If you have a lot that's over, say, a third of an acre, that's a lot.
Because
if it's more than that, they're trying to put two or three houses on it.
Yeah.
But I have a question. Well,
sure.
I'm going to throw this out to everybody. I've got, and you know, this is nothing, probably not a whole lot to do with technology other than that it's Mac related.
That has nothing to do with technology.
Yeah.
I've got a quite a large comic book collection, and I'm looking for some software that will help me catalog it. That will already have, you know, if I basically put in.
Have you looked at Delicious Monster?
No, I haven't. What is that?
It's a
website.
No, it's an application you can download. I've looked at it briefly, but I do know what you do is you hold up the barcode in front of your EyeSight camera, it reads it,
mm-hmm.
and it adds it to your library. It knows what it is. Most people use it for books
and CDs, and
CDs and DVDs.
Yep.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it works with comics, too. So check out deliciousmonster.com, guy.
Okay.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a couple specific comic book collection software titles that I'm not thinking of.
Well, I know there's what the names are, but that's Windows only.
What was that?
Comic Base.
No, there was a couple Mac ones that I looked at one point. One of them that I was going to do a review of, I just never got around to it.
Yeah.
I want something that's going to have you know all the metadata information on each book without me having to manually type it in.
So no, yeah,
I basically put in Amazing Spider-Man 116. It'll know who the artist was, who the writer was, and maybe even give me a.
Yeah, it would just tie into databases online that's filled out by fanboys.
Right.
Check out Delicious Monster.
Not that I'm one.
Just Google Delicious Monster and see if it will do comic books. I'm thinking it does.
Okay. Well, if anybody knows of one, you know, send an email to guy@mymac.com.
You might want to check out the Comic Buyer's Guide as well. Their website, CBG. They've got a lot of links to software and stuff for serious comic book collectors.
Okay.
If you're just looking at Newsrama to get your news and information, you're really missing a lot in the comic universe online. I think Comic Buyer's Guide is a better resource for actual collectors, whereas Newsrama is more of a, you know, New York Times type of a publication. But, yeah, that's Delicious Monsters. If you've got a large, say, DVD collection and you'd like to know what you have without getting up and looking at your collection, it gives you, like, a virtual shelf that you can see your movies on, that you can move it around.
Cool.
It's really neat. I've only heard good things of that program. In fact, Guy, you might go ahead and request a copy and say you want to review it for MyMac.com. They'll probably give you a copy for free.
From whoever I attend at CBG?
No. This is for Delicious Monster.
Oh, okay.
I'm quite sure we've done a review of it in the past. I think Bakari might have done it. Somebody did.
I want to check online.
Yeah.
Check the archive.
But it's one of those programs that I heard, once you start using it, it's almost becomes a compulsion that you want to keep adding more stuff into it because it's very intuitive. I mean, it uses your eyesight camera. How cool is that, Guy? You don't have to type in Amazing Spider-Man 116. You hold it up, it reads the barcode, it knows what it is. That's awesome. That's taking technology to the next logical step.
Well, the only problem with that is, you know, the only way that would work for me would be if I had a separate eyesight camera in order to, like, move it around and shine it on the comic book
instead of trying to hold it up
to the front of the iMac.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's not an issue, really. You just hold up the, you know.
You haven't seen this room that I've got the computer in.
Just buy one extra box, and you pull a comic out of the box, run it in front of the camera, put it in the empty box.
Yeah, well, actually, what I need to do is just, I think I've got somewhere in the order, somewhere between 45 and 50 long boxes. And what I need to do is find someplace big enough to where I can just, like, dump every single one of them in a big pile and then start sorting through them. And because most of them aren't even sorted. You know, I read them, put them in a plastic bag, and throw it in a box.
And that's always a problem with big collections of anything.
Right.
I would suggest that, I would bet you 75% of them you don't really give a crap about anymore.
True.
You see me pull back from the profanity I almost used right there.
Sorry.
And get rid of the ones that, who did the review?
Klaus Wolf, Delicious Library, 1.6.4. Back
Klaus
in,
Wolf?
Yep, 12-12-06.
12-12-06, Klaus did the review.
Yep.
Guy, so look under Archives, Klaus Wolf, and you'll find the review for Delicious Monster.
He is the master of archival things. So.
Absolutely.
Archival?
Archivable.
Yeah.
Archival?
Archival? I don't know.
Well, that's archival. That would how many animals you can fit on a boat, right?
No, that'd be archival.
Oh, we're
so yeah. Anyways, no, that's probably what I would look at first, Guy. I actually started a project very similar, but I just made a FileMaker Pro database, and Julie was going to help me do this, and she would she'd grab one and tell me what it is, and I would type it in and the number, and I was. As you type a title in, it would remember it. So the next time that I had to type in Superman, I just S-U-P-E-R, boom, it would pop up with Superman. It sounded like a great idea at the time, but it was a nightmare. Mm. I gave up after about 100 issues. I was like, okay, you know what? It's not worth it. I don't care enough to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was, if that's where you're at, right?
Klaus Wolf?
Yeah. Klaus did the review.
I can't find it.
December 06.
December 2006. A day that will live in infamy.
Me.
So if anybody else out there knows something that would... here's another idea too, Guy. There are barcode readers that work on the Mac.
Right.
So it might be a combination type of review that you're looking for to get a Mac-specific or Mac-compatible USB... barcode reader that you can use in conjunction with a program that's going to read that barcode populate the metadata into whatever database it is.
Right.
And give you both like a list view, which is really the most handy thing, to have a list view so you can say, hey, I'm missing. I didn't realize I was missing issue 77 of the series, as well as a graphical interface. So it's kind of pleasing to look at as well.
Right.
I think Delicious Monster is exactly what you're looking for, though. You're reading that review right now, aren't you?
Maybe.
Well, since you're reading and it's getting towards that time, we need to drop in some other segments. Guess we ought to sign off for this week.
Who we got?
Who do we got what?
The other segments.
I don't know. It's Wednesday. Nobody was expecting us to record this early, so I haven't got anything yet.
That was awkward.
So we may be ending the entire show right here, but we may have David Cohen coming up with Fenestration, which I really enjoyed his last week talking about.
That was great.
That was a good segment. So I guess we're out of here, guys. Any parting thoughts?
No, didn't have any starting ones.
Yeah, me neither.
Nope.
Thanks for joining us this week, Guy.
Oh, I was...
The last minute.
Yeah.
Coming in on a Wednesday, which we weren't counting on, and boom, there he is. And for our lady listeners, Guy is sitting there bare-chested in front of the EyeSight camera, teasing Chad and I.
Yeah, but no,
so, shake it, baby.
It's below my nipples.
So, for Chad and me, we're going to go take a cold shower real quick, and we're out of here.
Hello. My name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Hello, and welcome to Fenestration 35. In today's session, I'm going to talk about backup. As is so often the case, I've been prompted to think more carefully about backup by the fact that I had a system crash about a week ago. Now, fortunately, the machine in question, which is my main desktop machine at home, was fully backed up to a series of drives. So, while I've had some inconvenience in basically rebuilding the system and bringing it, I've not suffered any data losses. But the experience did start me thinking about perhaps giving some advice on how you might want to back up your Windows systems. That being your Windows systems you're running in virtual machines, either on an Intel Mac using Parallels or VMware, or alternatively if you're using Virtual PC or something earlier. The reason I highlight this is that while it's relatively easy to rebuild an OS X machine by pulling backed up versions of software straight off using the Migration Assistant, if you have to rebuild a Windows machine from scratch, even if it's a virtual one, you'll find it's a royal pain in the neck. What you have to do is, having created your virtual machine and installed your XP disk or your Windows Vista disk, you then need to go online and download an absolutely immense set of updates from Microsoft. I mean, we're talking many hundreds of megabytes here. I know that you have to do the same with OS X, but software update makes the situation quite a bit easier. Nowadays, unfortunately, with Windows, it's not very easy at all. Picture the situation. You have your version installed Windows XP in your virtual machine. What you then have to do is first of all make sure you've configured up all the firewall and possibly install some antivirus software, because as soon as you hit the internet with that thing, it's going to be exposed to some of the nasties that float around the internet. Then what you've got to do is connect to Microsoft's and start telling it you want to download updates. At that point, it will verify that your Windows installation is genuine. This can be a pain in the neck. What will happen is it will load some code on your machine and try and verify that the Windows you're using isn't a pirate copy. Even if it isn't a pirate copy, it can often find that it is. And even if it isn't a pirate copy and it verifies that it isn't a pirate copy, all of that stuff has to slow you down. Having done all of that, you then need to start downloading the updates. But you don't just get one list, these are all the updates I need to apply. You'll get a list of probably 150 updates, you'll install them, reboot the machine whenever you install anything you typically have to reboot. Having brought the virtual machine back up again, you'll have to go to Windows Update again, and you'll see some more. You'll have to keep on doing this until Windows Start tells you that it doesn't want to give you any more updates. As I say, it's a pain. It takes a long time, and you end up downloading the same stuff over and over again. Microsoft does not really make it easy to find this stuff rolled up somewhere where you can actually download the individual files and keep them. So, really what you want to do is avoid you have to installing Windows XP over and over again. The same thing will apply for Vista. It won't be as bad at the moment because Vista is fairly new, but time. Of course, if you're using virtual machines, it should be an awful lot easier, because once you've created your first Windows XP installation, you can archive that disk image off and use it again in the future. However, if you do a typical user thing, which is to install Windows XP, get all those updates installed, and then start installing your applications, they'll all be installed to the same drive that your Windows XP installation is on. So you'll still have to do the same dance with any applications you install. You'll have to install them to your machine and then check for updates. If you're using Microsoft Office, and let's face it, if you're running a Windows virtual machine, you probably are, then you're going to do the same song and dance that you have to do with Windows Update, but this time you have to do it with Office Update. You have to verify that your Office installation is genuine, and then start downloading patches, and then keep going through a cycle of reboot, recheck, reboot, recheck, until Office decides that it's fully installed. So with all of this, it is my recommendation that when you create a virtual machine, and it doesn't matter, again, as I say, whether you're using Parallels, VMware, Virtual PC, or something earlier on any operating system that is available on the particular Mac you're using, you need to have a think about how you're going to structure those virtual machines and the data in them to allow them to be easily moved around and restored if you're on a computer. What I recommend you do is once you've got that Windows installation just the way you want it, with your applications just the way you want them, you might even launch some of the applications and configure some settings, but you haven't got any user data on there. What I suggest you do at that point is then save that image in whatever format it comes in and burn it to a CD or a DVD. That way, the next time you have to rebuild your machine, you can install the virtualization software and you can then create a new virtual machine and ask it to use the disk image you supply off the CD or the DVD. And you won't have to go through the Windows reinstallation dance. Aha, you might say, but what about all my documents, all the stuff I have within Windows while I'm using it that I actually work on with my applications? My recommendation for this is to not store them within the main Windows drive that all the applications are installed on. What I suggest you do is that you use the virtualization software's ability to supply extra hard disks to the virtual machine, and you create a drive that you call a different drive letter, D, E, F, whatever you like, and you use that to store your data on. Once you've created and attached that drive to your machine, it will appear as a different drive letter within the virtual machine Windows Explorer. And what you can do then is you can move your My Documents folder to that drive, and you can move any copies of any data to that drive separately from your Windows application install. What that means is that any time your data is completely separate from the Windows install and the applications installed in it, which means that if you want to access that data with a machine configured differently or with a different software, you can do that very easily. And again, when you reinstall from a backup, when you want to recreate your virtual machine, if you've had to rebuild your entire computer, you can very simply do that, and you can then just attach that data drive to that new virtual machine, and boom, there's your data again. That's it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.